G'day everyone, Matt Ellis with you for a brand new edition of the Cricket Library podcast. And today we get to hear from a young lady who's made a very impressive start to her career in Queensland.
And she's gone. And that is a telling blow. And Sipple has picked up her fourth wicket.
Fourth wicket, and it's Beth Mooney.
Today we hear from Courtney Sipple to find out the origins of her passion for cricket, what it was like growing up in regional Queensland and making her way into the Queensland and Brisbane Heat squads, winning the WNCL at Queensland, life outside of cricket, and of course, who she would invite to her dream net session.
Got the edge! Magnificent ball! And the rookie gets rid of Healy. A magnificent delivery. So there's a fielder there! Gone! The catch is taken! And Gardner's gone! Sipple, the superstar, picks up her second in the over.
It's a very warm welcome to the Cricket Library podcast. Courtney Sipple, thank you so much for joining us.
No worries. Thank you for having me.
We always love to start with the beginning, I guess, and really keen to hear from you about your early memories of your love of the game and where your passion for cricket started.
I guess I started playing cricket when I was six, but I originally started from just playing on a tennis court with my family. My grandparents, both my granddads played cricket for high levels. One played for Australia, one played for Queensland Country. And then my dad always played and my older brother played. So I guess just going, leading from them and really enjoying it. We grew up on a dairy farm, so just playing on the tennis court at home, and yeah, it just took off from there, I guess.
Yeah, I love the little video. The Brisbane Heat put out a great video for anyone listening. You want to go and see what that looks like. I love the cricket net extension on the back end of the tennis court there. I've got three kids myself, and I reckon they would love to have that kind of environment to play. For you, growing up in regional Queensland, what did you enjoy about growing up regionally?
All of it, I guess. Just being out in the country, the slower pace lifestyle, being able to just go down the farm and play outside and do whatever we wanted to. It was a hike to our neighbours, but our cousins were our neighbours, so we just met them halfway, about half a K or so, and yeah, just played around. And yeah, I guess being able to play outside a lot, that really made me enjoy sports.
Yeah, did you do other sports aside from cricket? You've obviously progressed and pursued cricket as your main thing now. When you were growing up, were there other sports that took your interest?
Yeah, the main one was touch football. I also did stuff like karate, gymnastics, tennis, and so on. But yeah, the other main one was touch football, and I think that kept me fit for a while there, when I was allowed to play more than one sport. But yeah, it got me so fit. Yeah, there was a stage there where I didn't know whether I wanted to pursue touch football or cricket. And then I got back into playing cricket when the season was around, and then I ended up picking cricket and sticking to that, but kept playing touch because that kept me fit. So.
Yeah, yeah. And junior club cricket, what's it like for a young girl growing up in regional Queensland? What were your opportunities within local cricket clubs? You mentioned you had other siblings that did they play club cricket? How did you get into club cricket?
Yeah, my siblings played club cricket and then my cousins as well, but mum and dad were a big part of the club in Mergan District Cricket Club.
Yep.
So they just brought me into it and signed me up, and then yeah, I just went from there. There wasn't many girls playing, so it was just me and all the boys and maybe one or two girls. And then eventually we started a girls' team. There was only about 8 of us, I think.
Yeah.
But it was just our team, and we played in the under-14s comp, I'm pretty sure, and then we ended up winning it that year, but that was the only year that we played it and everyone else moved on. So bit different. I think it might be a little bit now. There might be a few more girls playing, but yeah, I pretty much just had to play with the boys and then the men.
Yeah. So did the girls team, was that in a boys competition? You had an all girls team?
Yeah.
And was it one of those years? I think I read somewhere one time you got a former Australian test cricketer's son out. Do you remember much about that?
Yeah, a little bit. So that was for QJC, and I was the only girl in all of that boys' competition. It was under 12s, and we were up in Atherton.
Oh, beautiful spot, the Atherton Tablelands. Yeah.
Yeah, it was very nice. And, yeah, I just remember, like, not knowing who he was or anything about it. And then like all the boys were talking about how good he was and everything. I'm like, oh, okay. And then, yeah, I think I ended up picking four for up that game. So that was pretty cool.
Yeah, that's awesome. And when you mentioned playing with adults as well, how old were you when you sort of started playing with adults?
I think I was around 13, 14. I didn't play A grade until a bit older, maybe 15 or something. But yeah, I played a little B grade with my granddad and a few of like my family, friends, dads and stuff. So.
And was that a good place for you to learn the game?
Yeah, I definitely think so. I think having all of those older players around you, they know a little bit more what they're talking about than you do at that age. So it's fun to learn off them, and they always want to give you a go, so they don't mind helping you out.
Yeah. Yeah, it's great when older people hang around cricket clubs and pass on their wisdom to younger players and give them the opportunity to test their skills against adults. And at that time, you're part of the Queensland Junior Representative pathway. Can you tell us a little bit about what was involved in that space for you? What was the travel commitment like? What was just the overall commitment for you to be a part of those junior representative teams for Queensland?
Yeah, so I made my first Queensland team at 11 and then played every year since then. But under 12, so when I was 11 and 12, I played, that was Queensland school sport. So that was pretty much just a one-off thing. You were just trained the week before you left, so that wasn't too bad. And then once I started getting up into those higher levels, under 15s became Queensland cricket instead of school sports. So that involved driving down every couple of weeks. But the girls trained on different days. So my brother was also in the Queensland cricket boys system.
Yep.
And we just decided to tackle two stones and pretty much went down the one day. So my brother had under 17s Queensland training on a Tuesday afternoon, so we would leave school at about 11 a.m. and then drive down, and then the Queensland Fire Girls trained that same afternoon. So I would hang around, have a hit on the ball machine and wait for the Fire Girls to start training, and I would jump in with them, and my brother would finish and then wait for me. And this was mum driving us down as well, because we didn't have our license or anything, and then we'd probably leave, I know, maybe about 7:30, and then not get home till 10:30, and have to go to school the next day.
Oh wow! How was the banter in the car? Yeah, you get on well with your brother?
Yeah, pretty good. Some days he would just stick his earphones in and then it would just be mum and I talking. But then other days he would chat quite a bit. So he's quite a quiet person, so we didn't chat too much, but I ended up living with him. So, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And you win the Nationals down in Bendigo 2019. As a young player, having the opportunity to play in these carnivals and tournaments, what did you learn out of those experiences? And I guess, what did you learn from winning and from losing? Because you had times when you didn't win the title and it took a while to get that result in Bendigo. Can you just reflect on that a little bit for us?
Yeah, I don't remember too much about the games themselves, but I do remember losing to New South Wales about four times in a row, the final two. So I think going into my final year, we had a gun team and we ended up winning almost every T20 game that we played. I think we ended up losing one, but yeah, and then we played New South Wales ACT country in the final and ended up beating them pretty easily. So that was a pretty nice feeling because pretty much that whole group was like came up through the system together. So we'd played for a fair few years and like just being able to win that together and put all the losses behind us and go out with a bang, that was pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah, definitely a great way to finish off. And at that time, had you broken into the Brisbane Heat squad at that stage, or were you sort of still on the periphery as far as the senior Heat team was concerned?
Yeah, so that year I was contracted by Brisbane Heat and Queensland Fire. So I remember we were travelling from either Bendigo to Ballarat or vice versa, and we ended up stopping at a pub and we were watching the girls, the Heat semi-finals. And I remember I was a part of that year, but because we had all of the underage stuff, Heat like just let us go and play under 18. So I was a part of that year for the Heat that they won their first title, but I was also away for their semi-final playing in the under 18 stuff.
Yeah, and just being around that group as a young person, a couple of titles there for the Brisbane Heat, a very successful period for them. What do you think made that group so successful?
Great question. I think because I wasn't around a huge amount because I was still living at the Sunshine Coast that first year as well. But I think everyone just worked out how each other played and how each other worked as a team and that they didn't have to be best mates. But when they walked out onto that field, they knew exactly what they had to do and knew the role that they needed to do and just got it done. Like, and I think at the end of the day, they started enjoying playing and started enjoying winning. And I think that came from all of their losses in the previous years as well and just learning how to actually work as a team.
Yeah. Yeah, and speaking of roles, I'm really interested, just to backtrack a little bit, you bat left-handed, bowl right-handed. I'd just be interested to know how that came about. How did you – was it just naturally you picked up the bat and batted left-handed, or did you watch TV and think, I want to bat like someone you're watching on TV? What was the story there?
So my dad bats left-handed and bowls right-handed. Oh. And then so that has just been the common theme in our family. My older brother does the same and then my younger brother does the same as well. So we've all just kind of taken after dad. I don't know if that's him pushing us a little bit or if it did come a bit naturally, but there's always a little legend and stuff being like, well, that's your dominant hand, so why wouldn't you bat with your top hand being a more dominant hand?
Yeah.
Because there was actually two other kids growing up that we would always train with, and yep, they were both left-handed bowlers. and right-handed bat. So it was just like a little thing that we were the opposite.
Yeah, yeah, because there's quite a few successful examples of it over time. People like Adam Gilchrist, probably the most prolific run scorer of someone who's done that. And did you consider yourself your primary role in the team now is with the ball, but have you always sort of considered yourself something of an all-rounder, and is batting something that you enjoy doing?
Yeah, I definitely think of myself as an all-rounder now, especially after that 18, the last year of my 18. I really enjoyed batting that year, and I actually got player of the carnival for my batting and not my bowling. So I definitely think I am a bit of an all-rounder, and I'd like to think that one day I can get my batting back to that top level and just really focus on it, because at the moment I've just been really focusing on my bowling, and then I just kind of put my batting to the side. So I think if I can find that happy medium of being an all-rounder and training like an all-rounder, then I think my batting will come back good again.
Yeah, yeah, very valuable skill to have, particularly in the shorter formats, being able to come in and score runs as the situation of the game dictates. And even in the 50-over stuff when you're playing WNCL, quite often you can come in and have a significant contribution to make. So definitely valuable to have the cross-section of skills. I'm interested to know your approach. Like, you're often in a situation where you're bowling up top, and you're also in a situation where you're bowling at the death. Just interested to know how you approach taking on that responsibility, and do you enjoy that responsibility of setting the tone for the game, as we've seen you do, getting wickets in your first over on a number of occasions, and then having to close things out. Can you talk us about the nuances of the two scenarios?
Yeah, I definitely love bowling everywhere in the game. I love opening, bowling through the middle and bowling at the death. And I think it's just, you got to understand your game first. And then, so I like at the start as well, you don't really have to use too much change of pace. So I like to stay pretty consistent with my pace, chucking my bouncer quite often, at least once an over if I can. And then potentially in T20s, you may go a slow ball and your opening spell. Otherwise, keep it to the end. But then through the middle, still being at consistent pace and just reading the game pace and understanding, okay, well, do I actually need to change the pace here, or will my stock balls and my bumper just be effective through the middle here? And then at the death, it's pretty much just don't keep more than two balls the same and just keep changing and keep the body guessing. I like to keep, for big bash, I like to keep pretty much the same field and then change it every so often. But yeah, then I'm just keep changing my pace, keep bowling different balls and try and have a lot of different balls to the same field, so then the batter actually doesn't know what's coming.
Mm. How do you keep your mind clear? Like, how do you have something, you get to the top of your mark? Is there a switch for you that just gets you in the, because essentially what you're trying to do is execute your best ball at that given point in time, which in the nets, we can all run in and bowl our best ball without the scoreboard pressure. Is there something that works for you in terms of being able to get yourself into a space where you have the best chance of executing your best ball?
Yeah, I breathe. So that's a big one for me. And then I actually just like to focus in on a certain spot. I know if I'm in my run-up and I'm looking at that spot and actually seeing where the ball's going to go, then I can actually judge myself on, okay, well, did I execute, or did the batter play a good shot? And then I'm pretty clear and I don't get too frustrated or anything if I'm clear with that and actually watching exactly where the ball goes and make a judgment from there. And then I also, you probably know when I'm in my groove because I have a little strut and I'm walking back to my mark. So everyone says it so much. They're like, yep, Sydney's on. He's got a strut out. So that's pretty another talent.
I love yeah. it. Just that's your body's way of saying, yeah, I'm in charge here. I've got this under control.
Yeah.
I love it. And what about if something goes wrong? Like, and there's things that are in your control that can go wrong. So you might be trying to bowl a Yorker and you get it slightly full and it's a full toss and they get it away. That's a scenario that could happen. And then the other scenario is you execute perfectly and then the batter just finds a way to find the boundary. How do you sort of put that out of your mind?
I guess just going back to just assessing whether I executed it or not and then being okay with the result and being like, okay, well, I can't change it now. So I like to get it out of my head before I walk back past the umpire.
Yeah.
Or get back to before I at least get to the top of my mark and then I'm already thinking about what's the next ball I want to bowl. So I think this being like, okay, that was a mis-execute. It got put away. It got what it deserved. And I'm turning around being like, okay, well, what's my follow-up ball?
Yeah.
And what am I going to do now to get back, I guess, to not let my over go for a big blowout and how to keep it quite tight still.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. And I wanted to ask you about the Ruth Preddy Trophy, probably the most sought after trophy in women's domestic cricket. New South Wales had a stronghold on it for many years, and then in the last few years we've seen Tasmania do really well. And prior to that, you're part of a Queensland team that gets to lift the trophy. As a girl growing up in country Queensland, what did it mean to you to put on the maroon cap for the first time?
It took me a while to actually put it on, actually. So a lot of my teammates thought I had already debuted. I guess it was a weirder feeling than normal because I was a part of the group for so long before I actually made my debut. But once I got it, I felt pretty privileged. Like, you get to walk out in your Queensland colours and that's not something everyone gets to do. So I think it's just, from now, it's just reminding myself that, like, it's a privilege to be able to put on a maroon shirt and a maroon cap and walk out onto the field and just take every opportunity that you get because it won't last forever. So.
Yeah. Yeah, and to actually not only win the trophy, but you get 3 wickets in the final against Victoria. I think Victoria had finished top of the ladder that season as well. So to win it with Queensland and that group, what are your recollections of that day and the feelings around the enormity of winning that title?
Yeah, pretty good, to be fair. I haven't won too many trophies before, so it was pretty cool feeling once the batters did their job and set 300 plus and we were like, yeah, cool, we pretty much got this in the bag if we just bowl well.
And they won the toss and bowled, didn't they?
I can't remember.
I've got a feeling, I'll have to look that up later, but I've got a feeling Victoria won the toss and bowled and then it was party time for the Queensland girls. They piled the runs on and was there a sense of were you feeling like, you just mentioned there, you felt like you had enough runs, and was there a point in the game where it was just a matter of time before you knew you'd be able to celebrate? Were you able to not get too far ahead of yourself, I guess is my question.
I guess once we got Delaney out, it was kind of like, cool, I think everyone's just relaxed a little bit.
Yeah.
Because she had scored so many hundreds that season. So we were just like, cool, she's out. I think it was a rankful toss that got her out. But she wanted to take it. And, yeah, then I think everyone just kind of relaxed. And then once we were relaxed, we just kept going and kept picking up wickets. And then, yeah, it was a pretty cool feeling, like, to be able to get the last wicket too and everyone run up to me and jump on me. And then I was at the bottom of the huddle when all of her was taken and whatnot. But, yeah, it was a pretty cool feeling. And I'm glad that we ended up getting a win that year because we had a really good season.
Yeah, a thoroughly satisfying finish to the season for Queensland there. And subsequent to that, you have a great year with the Heat. Personally, like your personal performances outstanding, and you start to kind of knock on the door for some Australia A selections. And part of that time, you win the Betty Wilson Award at the Cricket Australia Awards, and that's a peer nominated emerging player award. What does it mean to you to know that the people that you're playing with are that respectful of your performances that you end up winning an award like that?
I think it's got to be probably one of the best feelings. Like, you're coming up against elite players who have been in the game for a long time, and they're seeing a young player show potential, and just them seeing how much they rated me and seeing how much I've had a good year, and you don't know a lot of these girls and they're looking at you as a good person and a good player. So I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, and your experience with the Australia A group and playing games like the Governor General's 11, what have you learnt about your own cricket from being in that sort of next level up environment? What have been the key learning points for you from having those opportunities?
I guess that it's actually not all that complicated, not that different from the domestic level. You just got to be that little bit more consistent with everything. So I think just learning the different conditions and being able to test them quicker, I've definitely learned that. From playing all those different games and just, yeah, reading the game or after even in the field, being able to be like, okay, cool, there's a bit of a stitch there, or if I take this angle better, way quicker, and flip throughs if I'm going to bounce it or throw straight on the ball to the keeper because of the field. So I think just all of those learnings all together has just made me a better player.
And playing in the white uniform with the red ball, how is it physically going from shorter format to longer format cricket, particularly since you don't get many opportunities to play red ball cricket at Queensland?
Yeah, it's pretty cool, to be fair. Like, you grow up watching men's cricket and they're all playing in whites, and you haven't played in white since you're a little kid, basically, for women's cricket. And then going into playing red ball, and then the challenge of not being on your feet for so long. So I think the fitness, you definitely have to be pretty fit for it and just be used to it. And then just playing with a red ball as well, like, that's a different challenge. Like, a lot of us girls haven't played with red ball for years as well, so just like the red ball swings a bit more, and then I was just learning how to control that again, and then going from there.
Yeah, and aspirations to play. Obviously, I'm just imagining here that once you've had a taste of that, it lights the fire to kind of want to play the next level up.
Yeah, definitely. And I think being able to play those types of games, and when you execute in those games, it's quite exciting to be like, okay, well, if I can do this more consistently, then I'm actually not that far off playing at the next level. I've just got to wait for my turn and then wait for my opportunity and then go from there and make sure I take it and just be ready. So,
yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And what about life outside of cricket? You're still very young, 23 years old. What does like a winter look like for you? What are the things you like to do in your downtime away from the game?
Yeah, I like to chill out quite a bit. I like to go back to our family's property on the farm, hang out there for a few weeks. I enjoy camping, so try to get on a few road trips every now and again and just experience the country and look at all the different places there and just try and relax and not think about anything to do with cricket. And then, yeah, that's pretty much it, to be fair.
Yeah, time away. Always good to switch the phone off and just enjoy real life for a little while. That's for sure. And goals for the future. What are you sort of looking to try and work towards in the season ahead from a personal perspective?
Definitely try and crack into the Australian team. I think that's definitely one of my big goals. And then I'm going to try and work harder on my batting again and really focus on training as an all-rounder and putting that extra work in to focus on my batting and actually acknowledging that I need to do that. So, and finding ways to stay in my routine and be able to function to do that. I've now just moved to the Sunshine Coast, so being able to drive that extra hour basically to training. So I think I've just got to stay in my routine and make sure I'm staying fit and healthy and working hard. So.
Yeah. Do you enjoy batting? Do you enjoy firing up the bowling machine and launching a few?
Yeah, I do really love it. Sometimes when I haven't bat for a while, I think, oh, no, maybe I don't like it. And then I have a hit and then I'm like, yeah, no, this is something that I really love doing. And I love working on the tennis ball machine. I think that is what helps me the most. And I think it's because we grew up doing it. Like my granddad has a tennis ball machine in his garage and then we had one on the tennis court. So I think because we just grew up using it, that now that's actually something that works for me quite a lot. So just going out and just having fun with it too every now and again, like not worrying about having to do technique right or anything, just hitting the ball and having fun every now and again. So,
oh, it definitely is fun. I think Ricky Ponting said cricket's a good game and batting's a better game. But, yeah, there'd be fast bowlers like yourself that probably enjoy bowling equally as much as yeah, hitting the ball around. Now, our final question, Courtney, this is one, hopefully you've had a little bit of time to think about this. If you could create a dream cricket net session and you can invite anyone you want, so they don't have to be cricket people, but you've got three people that you can invite to hang out at the nets, and it could be on the family farm. You might want to invite them out there. Could be anywhere. It's hypothetical. It's use your imagination. Who are the three people that you're going to invite?
I think Adam Gilchrist, because I've always wanted to meet him, and I would love for him to sing out the family farm and our setup.
Yeah.
Johnny Depp, because he would just be able to have a laugh and basically take the piss out of everything that we do.
Yeah.
And then the third one, I'm not actually sure who I would go for my third one because, yeah, I think that's pretty much a good mix. So I'm not really sure. Maybe a singer or something, because I love my music. So maybe invite a singer and they can just sit there and sing for us while we're hitting balls and whatnot on the court.
Who's on your Spotify rotation at the moment? You got any that stand out now that you think, oh yeah, they play some good tunes for a net?
Morgan Wallen's definitely up there. I love my country music, so even Tom or anything like that. So yeah.
I love that you've chosen some country music. That's very on theme. I like it.
Yeah.
Well, thanks so much, Courtney, for sharing some of your story with us on the Cricket Library podcast. Really appreciate you taking the time to do so. And apologies for having you talk about cricket in the off-season. You can forget about this now and get back to enjoying having a little bit of a break and a freshen up, and really wish you all the best for the summer ahead up there in Queensland.
Awesome. Thank you.
A massive thanks to Courtney Sipple for joining us on this edition of the Cricket Library podcast. And a massive thanks, of course, to you, our loyal listeners who tune in to each and every episode. It is wonderful to have your support. And, of course, a warm welcome to all of our new listeners as well. If you are a new listener, we trust you enjoyed this chat, and we are certain you'll find something in the back catalogue that takes your fancy. So make sure you hit the subscribe button, make sure you have a look through the back catalogue and catch up on some episodes that you may have missed along the way. Plenty to keep you busy throughout the winter if you're in the southern hemisphere, or just to accompany your summer if you're over in the northern hemisphere and listening to the podcast. It's wonderful to have your company wherever you are. We've got plenty of great stories coming up in this season of the podcast. We look forward to sharing them with you. This has been Matt Ellis for the Cricket Library podcast. Bye for now.